Welcome to Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn, hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
So I did, I went and got blood work done, and lo and behold, found out that I had stage 4 colorectal cancer. And once I reached my lifetime max of chemotherapy, they found out that my body wasn't responding to the medicine. I had inoperable disease at that point. So there was no other remedy for me. They could do nothing else for me. They sent me home on hospice. And this is where I usually tell people, well, you don't really get the rest of the story until you hear what happened here.
Hello and welcome. Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the power of a proper human diet. And today I'm thankful, grateful, blessed to welcome Kevin Hennings to the channel. Welcome, Kevin. How are you doing?
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you so much for having me.
I am excited to hear your story, Kevin. You are a cancer survivor. You are thriving. I believe at one point you were diagnosed with cancer and probably left a little bit without hope. But here you are now, absolutely thriving with an incredible story. And I'd love to dig into that a little bit more with you. Maybe if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe your life before your diagnosis.
Okay. Well, my name's Kevin. And so I was in the United States Marine Corps, fast forward 20 years. And I was down in the Keys fishing. I was actually a fishing captain to celebrities. I did all celebrities. That was kind of my niche. And sponsored by Bass Pro. I had a TV show. Everything was going good. Things were going really good. And then I got sick. I was in denial. My lifestyle. Well, let me rewind a little bit. I was a professional athlete for some time also. Fresh out of the Marine Corps, I fought professionally. So a healthy lifestyle was kind of my thing. And then life got in the way. I found some comfort and I started gaining weight and I started, pursuing more comfort. And that tended to be, the root of all evil for me. Very addictive lifestyle. It didn't really matter what it was, whether it was on the water with celebrities, off the water doing shows. It didn't really matter. I got caught up in the grind, so to speak. And then my nutritional health, my lifestyle, everything suffered because of it. I started gaining weight. I started kind of losing track of where I was fundamentally, whether it be fitness or nutrition, it just wasn't a priority in my life anymore. I got caught up in the game, I guess you could say. Right. And so as a result, I started getting sick and I started ignoring my body. My body was telling me plenty, but I was ignoring it. And as a result of that, I started going through symptomatic things that are kind of like in your face, to the point where I was passing out. I was, things that you couldn't ignore anymore. And I had gone to a family reunion and people hadn't seen me in years and relatives that I hadn't seen in a while. And collectively, I was approached and they said, hey, listen, you don't look good. you need to go get blood work. And I'm like, you know what? That's just haters are going to hate, you know? So, but I was passing out and I couldn't ignore things anymore. It was starting to actually interfere with progress in my life. So I did, I went and got blood work done. And lo and behold, I found out that I had stage 4 colorectal cancer. Mm. And the prognosis was not great, but I went to Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa. And those doctors were absolutely amazing. They were brilliant. And I battled the cancer for 3 years. I got better, and then I got worse, and then I got better, and then I got worse for 3 years until I reached my lifetime max of chemotherapy. And once I reached my lifetime max of chemotherapy, they found out that my body wasn't responding to the medicine.
Quick interruption. Beast Mode Soap sent me this soap, 100% beef tallow, free to try. This is certified grass-fed tallow, never vegan, made in the USA, natural essential oils. We got forest ash, paleo pine. We're in the pine forest. The forest ash is my favorite. I've been using it for a while now. They sent this to me for free, but I liked it so much I agreed to do a paid partnership with them because I believe people need to know what they're putting on their body. And the soap that I had at home is full of chemicals, detergents. Seriously, after I use this soap, my skin feels so soft and so incredible. What you put on your skin ends up in your bloodstream. And I only want to put good things in my body and on my body. And this, there couldn't be much better. This is 100% beef tallow.
Learn more at beastmoatsoap.com.
I had inoperable disease at that point. So there was no other... there was no other remedy for me. They could do nothing else for me. So I was referred to hospice. And with that, they just gave me very short time to live. It was a very grim prognosis. Now here's where the story gets good, because all of that being said, I do feel like that was almost an invitation in my life. I almost invited this disease into my life because of my lifestyle. Because of just ignoring the obvious. You know, if you could just have a timeline of pictures, you know, of yourself over years, you could actually see yourself deteriorating or whatever, you know. I never took a snapshot of that in my mind. I just was going with life, you know. But nevertheless, I went through 3 years of chemotherapy, lifetime max. They could do nothing else. They sent me home on hospice. And this is where I usually tell people, well, you don't really get the rest of the story until you hear what happened here. So I wish we had a buildup. I wish there was like some background music.
That was a good buildup right there. Like, I'm on the edge of the seat right now.
Well, there's a reason for the theatrical buildup, right? So this was during COVID, and my sister is a nurse practitioner. She is on the phone with me while I'm getting this news from the doctor. The doctor says, listen, there's really nothing else we could do for you. And he refers me to the social worker, and they set up the hospice thing, and she's still on the phone with me. And she knows what's happening because she speaks the lingo. I don't really understand what's going on, and I'm certainly not thinking that this is the end, right? Like, I don't feel that's the case. So I leave the hospital, and my sister's still on the phone, and she's bawling, she's crying, and it's a very emotional time. She understands what's happening. I'm still processing. And I say, you know what, let's call my other sister in. My other sister is kind of like, she's kind of, well, I call her Disney. Disney, that's her nickname, Disney, because... well, I tell you, everything is always sunshine and rainbows. Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder. If my sister Shelly, if she can bring sunshine into a room, watch out. It's so I call her up, but she's very active in church. She's everything's positive about this girl. Like, there is no negative aspect to her. And at this moment, I needed some of that sunshine. And so I call her up. And, You know, the last thing that I want to hear, the last thing I want to happen at this moment, in this moment in time, is I don't want somebody beat me over the head with a Bible. So, you know, I'm still trying to process. Let me drink this in for a second. And, you know, if you have a solution, please, now's the time to speak, you know. And she said, you know, Kevin, a while back, right about the time that you got diagnosed, a friend of mine in church, you know, I know this guy from church. Here it comes. Now she's going to beat me around the head with a Bible. And I said, listen, Shelly, I can't do this right now. Don't beat me up with a Bible. I just got this news. I'm trying to figure things out. What's my next step? I certainly don't want a hospice. You know, and she says, no, Kevin, you're not listening. This guy got diagnosed with the same kind of cancer you got, like the same week. He went through one round of chemo. And he couldn't do it. He said, you know what? That's it. I can't do it. And so he quit. He quit. And today he sits no evidence of disease. And I said, well, that's amazing. You know, what did he do? Well, you know what? He quit. He couldn't do the chemo. His wife is a veterinarian from South America. She just so happened to treat him the way she treats her animals. And she gave him an anti-parasitic medicine, and it was called fenbendazole. And this fenbendazole treated his cancer, and he was no evidence of disease. And I said, well, what is this fenbendazole? She says, well, it's a horse medicine. And me and my other sister, who were on a conference call, laughed and laughed and laughed. And there she is, that kooky Disney. I love her so much. Listen, that's ridiculous. You're absolutely out of your mind. And I gotta go. I don't have time. Thank you for the jokes. Is this a bit? Right? Like, I was like, you gotta be absolutely out of your mind. I'm not trying to commit suicide. I'm trying to stay alive. I'm on my way to hospice. This is no joke. I gotta go. See you later. Well, I was a couple hours from home. The hospital was far away, and the mile marker's ticking, 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 ticking. I'm getting closer to the reality that's waiting for me at home. That's hospice. I have a meeting tomorrow with him. Let me call Disney back. Hey, you got the guy's number? Right? So she gives me the guy's phone number, and I call him. Luckily, thank God, he answered. And he gives me kind of a Reader's Digest version, and he tells me very briefly, just enough to wet my whistle. I go down a rabbit hole that night. I didn't sleep at all. 9 o'clock the next morning, I have a meeting with hospice. And I didn't sleep at all. Scrambling around trying to get my things together so I could get to this meeting. They're going to measure my room for the bed. I'm not ready for this. I'm going to the meeting, and it's unseasonably crazy traffic. And I got pushed over two lanes because of a car carrier that's coming to pick up cars for the season. And I end up getting pushed off course, and I had to make a detour doing a U-turn in a guy's parking lot for a car wash. And I know this guy. He's kind of abrasive. Well, my wife and I, we had just recently planned my funeral, picked out my clothes. We've done all those sorts of things that tend to put your mindset in a different place. And the only thing I could think of is this guy, this abrasive guy that I hadn't talked to in years, who owns the parking lot with cameras all over the place. The only thing I could think about is this guy showing up to my funeral in front of my wife and talking smack about me, interrupting his business at the car wash, making a U-turn right before I died. I know that's a silly thing to think. It's insane where my mind was. And so I said, you know what? Let me save face here. Take a second. I'm going to stop. I'll just wave to him from a distance. He's usually really busy. And I'll say, hey, listen, I just want to say hi. And I'll keep going, like gloss over this. This way, no way he's going to talk bad about me at my funeral. So this is like where my mind was, right? So I do that. And I say, hey, bud, just wanted to check in. And he says, oh, you get out of the office. Kevin, sit down. Come here. Like, all right, this is a type A personality, right? I'm like, oh, here it goes. Hey, bud. Sorry, I just didn't want to interrupt anything. I just wanted to say hi. And I was passing through. He's like, yeah. See, it looks like you came to say hi. It looks like you came to say goodbye. He's like, who is this? I'm like, oh, there he is. That's the guy I remember, right? Real jerk. Well, I got something for you. I'll hit you where it hurts, right on the heart. Well, I don't know if you heard, but I got cancer. Dun, dun, dun. Like, there's the bull. He says, yeah, I heard. So, what are you going to do about it? I said, oh, man, well, let me hit him harder. I don't know if you heard. I'm going to hospice. That's what I'm doing about it. I'm heading over there right now. Well, I don't know who's going over to hospice, Kevin. But this is not the Kevin I know. He said, the Kevin that just walked into my office as a victim, I don't know who this is, but this is not the warrior who I know. And I said, yeah, I told you, it's done. He says, well, let me explain something to you. About 8 months ago, a friend of mine got misdiagnosed with esophageal cancer. I own a racing team, and I was there getting a tractor supply, getting a fuel bladder for my race car. And the guy likes to go fast. And so he's like, I'm getting a fuel bladder loaded up on my truck at Tractor Supply. This guy has got a lot of money. He don't dig ditches. His nails are clean, big office, smelling rich of mahogany, right? Like a lot of leather bound books, right? Like he's really kind of well off. He doesn't dig ditches. He shouldn't be a Tractor Supply. This guy is in a different class. He has people go to Tractor Supply for him, right? So he says, you know, it was during COVID. He says, you know, I was leaning up against the end cap there, and it was right around the time that Rogan and Trump were doing this ivermectin thing for the COVID and hydrochloroquine and blah, 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 all this repurposed stuff. He says, my buddy gets diagnosed with this esophageal cancer, and I'm leaning up against this thing. I said, hey, let me grab a box for him. On my way home, I'm heading home, pulling the trailer behind me. He's like, my phone rings. My buddy says, hey, great news. I was misdiagnosed. Okay. He says, I get back to my office, top right-hand drawer, it's a big box. I'm fumbling around with it. I throw it into the top right drawer for 8 months. I fumble around with this thing for 8 months. And every day I go to throw this thing away. I'm like, man, I got to get rid of this thing. But something in the back of my mind says, don't get rid of it. He says, for 8 months, I've been fumbling around with this thing. And he reaches out and he hands it to me. He says, Kevin, I've been waiting for you. Now, I was raised right. I have some spiritual upbringing. I'm not that guy. I'm not the one to regurgitate scripture. I've never read the Bible. I don't go to church. This is my church. If you don't think that there was a reason that detour happened, if you don't think that conversation with Disney the day before occurred for a reason, I started taking fenbendazole that day, canceled my meeting with hospice. In 6 weeks, well, I should back up. I started taking that fenbendazole that day, literally within the hour from walking out of his office. I figured too many coincidences. I drastically did some other things as well. I didn't start eating different things, but I did stop eating certain things. And I started taking this fenbendazole based on my faith. I mean, I believed that this was a series of coincidences like this, too much.
Right.
I'm not that guy. I'm not the one who's standing on the corner with signs and missing it. Not that guy. God bless those people. I'm not him. I started taking this fenbendazole based on faith that this had to be God's plan. I started taking this fenbendazole. I restructured my entire lifestyle nutritionally. And in 6 weeks, I had 50% less disease. And in 14 weeks, I had no evidence of disease. And it turns out, silly me. Now, in fairness, I did tweak things along the way. I added things, supporting cast of supplements, I guess you could say. Curcumin, anti-inflammatory stuff, mushrooms, you know, stuff like that. But the star of the show was obviously the anti-parasitic, right? So, but it turns out there was an overwhelming amount of science, clinical trials that were done, clinical studies that were published and peer-reviewed by major cancer institutions. There were a treasure trove. There was a treasure trove of data and research that supported the science of this efficacy. So as it turns out, the science followed my faith, not the other way around. Hmm. You know, I started doing this. I changed my life. And you know, a lot of these life changes, the lifestyle changes, were just fundamental changes that I forgot. I got lost along the way. I had a good foundation. I was 100 pounds overweight. I told you I used to fight. That had a lot to do with cut. I wrestled all my life growing up. It had a lot to do with nutrition, like you're cutting weight always. Well, that messes you up over time. And as an adult, you suffer the consequence of that. Your metabolism's all crazy. You start substituting things, and it's a slippery slope. So I was literally 100 pounds overweight. Yeah, I got the t-shirt that says, I was a professional athlete. The t-shirt didn't fit. I was a fatty, you know, as a fatty 2x4. So I had to change all that. You know, nothing changes if nothing changes. So, but yeah, I didn't mean to get on a tangent, but that's the background of how I was introduced, you know, to, well, it was a reminder of, you know, the important things in my life. You know, I mean, I reflect back on the biblical days, you know, and it's a funny thing about that. And I don't mean to hijack your time, man. I'm so sorry.
No, this is perfect.
But funny thing about that is, like, I look back in the biblical days and, you know, I got caught up in this The Chosen. You watch that?
You were just talking earlier about like a plan and too many coincidences. Over the last 2 days, I've had three people tell me I need to start watching The Chosen, including my very good friend Bill Knott in Alaska, who's one of the first people we filmed for this documentary. He just literally yesterday he told me, "Kerry, I watch it every single night. Like, he's like, I haven't missed it." And I was just talking to him yesterday. I'm like, "Yeah, my wife Jen and I, we're gonna start watching that." He's telling me where to watch and everything. He's just a lot of weird coincidences like that. Providence.
There are really no mistakes, right? Like we met. I'll tell you what. Another funny thing, you know, Dana, my cousin, our other cousin, who is a cancer survivor, also, he got cast as an extra as a Roman soldier in that series, right. And now he's following season after season. He's in the show. Wow. I mean, it isn't like speaking role; like he's an extra, but they keep using him. That's cool, right? Wow. So, but I refer to that show only because not because of the message, as much as the message is awesome, but it's not because of the message. It's because of, well, similar to, you ever see these memes or whatever, you see a compare and contrast a photo of Manhattan on the street of Manhattan in 1956 versus 2025. I get it. There's a bunch of fat people, a bunch of skinny people, you know, whatever. So, In contrast, watching The Chosen, you see their lifestyle back then was single ingredient foods. They walked from village. The disciples, they would leave their house, kiss their wife, grab a fistful of grapes, and they would walk miles and miles and miles to the next village to talk to two people that may or may not be listening because the Roman soldiers were staring at them, you know. But the point is not all that. The point is single ingredient foods, exercise in the sun, you know, like these are things that are, they didn't have cancer. Now, granted, they had leprosy and stuff like crazy, but they didn't have cancer, you know. So, you know, what would the cavemen, you know, back in the day, cavemen, they would make a kill and they wouldn't eat again until the next kill.
Right.
If you're eating three times a day, well, let's back up. If you're, the human body can only fully digest to evacuation. I'm talking about dinner plate to toilet bowl. You can only fully digest one meal in a 24-hour period.
Yep.
That's if it's not meat. Some meat takes up to 72 hours. So if you're eating three, four, five, six times a day, well, I got to eat seven times a day. I have a high metabolism. No, you don't. You're spiking yeah, all day long. You're going to be a diabetic before you know it. So, but I digress. Sorry. But you're stacking meals at the end of the week. You're eating three times a day. That's, you're stacking two meals a day. Mathematically, that's 14 meals. That's 14 meals of undigested food that is in 30 feet of colon, right? 30 feet of intestines, right? So that's fermented. That's a typhoon of toxicity.
Yeah.
This is, as obvious. I mean, it's inflammation buildup. It's everything. Now, I'm not talking about it because I was theatrical. I was a little dramatic earlier. I'm not talking about dinner plates being stacked up inside of you. I'm talking about the meat goes in, your body, like a bunch of piranhas, attacks the meat, strips it of all the valuable stuff, and then whatever's left over is the poop, right? That's what's debris that's left over, the garbage, you know, that's going to be evacuated. Well, you can only do that so much.
Right.
I got friends that say, oh, not me. I eat it. I see what I in the toilet. I eat it. It comes right out. No, it doesn't. It's, you know, maybe something behind it is pushing it. You know, some things maybe go right to the front of the line. But the point being is that you're stacking meals. There's no way that you could physically get that out as it comes in.
Well, you know, the crazy thing with that too is I've realized this just fixing my nutrition for like the last 2 years now too. I go so less frequently than before, but then it really makes you realize, to your point exactly, what an incredible amount of energy it takes to for your body. Your body's like, what the hell's going on? Another meal, another meal, another meal. And then I used to get to the end of the day and I'm like plunking down on the couch and this is my job, Kevin. I type on a computer. Why am I so exhausted at the end of the day? But it makes sense because we're just putting this incredible toll on our body with all the toxicity and inflammation and digestion. You get to the end of the day and you're like, you're tapping out and you don't have any energy left.
Well, as it pertains to energy, what goes up must come down. I don't care how healthy you're eating. Every time you're eating, there's a spike. You have an insulin spike, boom, 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 boom. So you're eating seven times a day, eight times a day. Ooh, my metabolism's fast. No, you're killing yourself is what you're doing. You're stripping away years for all-cause mortality, right? Like you're just stripping years off of your life, right? And you name the disease. It doesn't matter.
That's the biggest thing I've learned doing this documentary. You're absolutely – every disease, like it's crazy. We've interviewed a woman that's got Parkinson's. Tons of people, they just reverse type 2 diabetes, just like nothing, just by changing their diet. I love what you said earlier. If you just look at this, take a big step back and look at the bigger picture. Since the start of time, humans were not doing what we've been doing for the last 100 years or so, just stacking meal after meal after meal. Yeah. And it, like when it comes to all of these diseases, whether it's type 2 diabetes or cancer, one of the biggest things that I've come to realize is it's really just an escape from what is natural for humans or species appropriate for humans. Like the further away you get from what we've done naturally forever, we end up getting sicker and sicker. And you do it for long enough with chronic systemic inflammation, you end up with cancer if you do it for years and years.
There's one common denominator. There's and there are some things that you could misinterpret. there's some things that, you know, the information's not accurate or it's half truths or whatever. You know, you really don't know what to believe nowadays on the internet and everything else. But logically speaking, there is one common denominator, whether you're talking about Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, diabetes, cancer, it doesn't matter. If you saw, like, my, I'm kind of a nerd in the way, like, in my office, I have a wall, and there's, like, you would think, like, this is like a murder, like a something from a TV show, because there's yarn that goes boom, 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 for all these diseases, and the one commonality, the one common denominator is food. That is the one common, and the Don, the grand poobah, the head of it all, whatever, the king, but whatever you want to call it, is the glucose. It's, you know, that. And I mentioned earlier that I watched a few of your videos because you're really kind of like, I love your message. And I think that I'm just so, it's a constant reminder to myself. You know, I think iron sharpens iron. And when I watch your stuff and listen to your message, I just, it makes me want to improve my own message, right? Like, and I really enjoyed your videos when I was watching them. So, but the reason why I mentioned that is because you had mentioned in one of your videos addiction. And I had previously just a few seconds ago told you that I'm a little piggy. Right, like I am a weak, weak person. I mentioned the fact that you can't get rid of the meals fast enough, right? Like you could only process what you could process to evacuation. For that reason, I personally, because I have colorectal cancer, I don't have some of the hardware you have. I don't have a rectum. They took it. I don't have a full colon. I have like a semicolon. And so, come on, man, you're killing me.
That was a good one.
So, yeah, so that actually was not my joke. That was Jim Brewer's joke, actually. He said that to you. He's like, oh, you're a little son. I was like, yeah. So for me, it's a discipline thing. In the absence of discipline, I don't have the discipline to choose right from wrong, so I abstain. I'm right now, currently speaking, I'm in my third day of a fast. Listen, food is not your friend. Just coincidentally, right? Like for me, fasting health-wise is great systemically because of my absence of parts, right? Like, so systemically, fasting is great for me. But health-wise, well, that's a lucky coincidence. The health that I have achieved from changing my nutritional lifestyle has been beyond any medicine, you know. And when I talked about the yarn going all over the place, you know, the commonalities is the glucose, right? That's a kingpin, right? Like if you're doing the hierarchy of the crime family, right? It's going to be up there, right? So, I can't choose right from wrong, so I abstain. You know, so I forgot where I was going with that, but the point being is that get me back on track.
No, you were talking about addiction and abstaining. I think it's such an important message because I'm completely abstained for over 2 years now from carbs, glucose, sugar, junk food, and it's completely changed my life. But before that, I experimented. And I would be like, oh, I did good all week. Now I can have a cheat day. And I think framing it from the perspective of addiction is so important because there's a lot of people out there suffering. And maybe they have cancer. Maybe they have type 2 diabetes. But if they don't realize and admit it's an addiction, they're going to just keep yo-yoing. And you'll binge. And you'll go back and forth. And I did that for years and years. And I see that with so many people. There's almost a stigma around addiction. And I'm like, you should have no shame about being addicted to food. Literally, our parents gave it to us when we were babies. They didn't know any better. There's food scientists that get paid millions, if not billions of dollars to make this stuff highly addictive. So there shouldn't be any shame, but I think it is really important to, if you want to overcome an addiction, you have to admit it, right? That's the first step. You got to realize there's an addiction, or most people don't ever admit that and they end up perpetuating their suffering.
Yeah, so you've been sugar-free for 2 years?
Yeah, so 2 years now, I went strict carnivore. I haven't had anything but beef, butter, bacon, eggs for 2 years. Other than there's a little bit of carbs you can get in eggs, like a little tiny bit. Other than that, I haven't had anything. I haven't had a single cheat or anything. And I tell people that, Kevin, and they're like, oh, Mr. Perfect, but similar to you, nowhere near to the extent of you, but I was so sick before I found this. I was horribly, suicidally depressed. I had IBS. I had sleep apnea. I'd stop breathing throughout the night. I was 100 pounds heavier than I am today. So my why was so important. Like, I was on my hands and knees, like, begging God, what, anything, give me anything. And then I found this, completely changed my life. So I'm like, I'm not going to go eat a Twinkie or a piece of pizza now and throw all that away, especially knowing how addictive I was before that. Like, I have a little bit of anything, I'll go off the rails. It'll be over for me.
Yeah. So for you, there's a consequence. I think there's a tax for everybody, right? Like, there's a consequence for what we do. Like, for me, garbage in, garbage out. Like, for me, it's a systemic consequence. And then I can't stop. Like, I, you know, the dopamine, that whole thing, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it is equivalent to an opium addiction, I think. I mean,
I'm with you. And I've seen research too, where it's like, when you have sugar glucose, it lights up the brain on an MRI, just like cocaine.
Yeah.
And I've interviewed so many people at this point. I've interviewed several people that are like, Kerry, I was on hard drugs at one time, and it was easier to get off of that than it was sugar. Like, it is so hard. And the difference with the sugar and the food is, we got to eat. Fasting's amazing, but we got to eat. So you're just inundated with this all the time. And then you go to grandma's house for a holiday. Yeah, come on, have a pie, have a piece of cake. And they don't treat it like an addiction. So it is a hard thing.
You know, I want to go back to the carnivore thing, because I'm about to embark on a transition. I want to circle back to that.
Yeah.
What I was getting about with the yarn, you know, that yarn thing. Oh, I lost it again. what I was getting at with the yarn thing, with addiction, the commonalities, and it doesn't really matter what disease you're talking about. The glucose is the commonality of all of it. Like, it's the common denominator of all of this stuff. But when you start fasting, just because you're fasting doesn't mean that your body stopped eating. Your body continues to eat. It's cleaning up all that garbage and everything. Well, your body, you say that, like, you eliminated glucose altogether. Well, your body still releases glucose several times a day. Right. People think that, oh, well, I'm all carved out and this and that. Well, systemically, you know, you'll get medicated and then more medication and more medication. They'll put you on statins, and people say, oh, well, I don't understand. Now, I think that the information's viral that, you know, statins reduce cholesterol and cholesterol feeds your brain and you get dumb if you take statins, blah, 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 blah. Well, there's other things too. I mean, cholesterol is a hormone, right? So you're taking these statins and you reduce the hormones, or you reduce the cholesterol. Well, cholesterol also creates DHEA, which is what creates your testosterone. Your testosterone comes from DHEA, right? So, so it's a slippery slope. You know, when all you had to do is adjust your nutrition. I had high cholesterol, and my doctor put me on statins, and I said, I'm not taking the statins. And he said, well, why aren't you going to take the statins? And I said, well, I'm not going to take the statins because I don't want to get dementia and be stupid and then die. And then they said, well, okay, well, if you don't take the statins, you're going to get heart disease and die. And I said, okay. And she says, well, which would you rather die from? I said, is that your argument? Is that the argument that just happened here?
Right.
Is that, for the answer, I would rather have a heart attack and die. But, I mean, who wants to forget everybody and then die, you know? So, but yeah, and then I get lost and stuff. No, I'll take the heart attack, thanks. But the point being is, that's the argument, right? Like, Medicaid, Medicaid, Medicaid.
Yeah.
Instead of just, so the bet was, come back in 6 months. If you improve it through nutrition, you don't have to take the statin. But if you don't, you have to agree to take the statin. Okay? Back. 6 months later, I go back. My cholesterol is lower than normal, like below the normal levels. And she says, yeah, but I'd really like to see that regulated. You need a statin to regulate it.
They love pushing those statins so hard. It's like, do you get like $1 million if you push these statins?
By hook or by crook, it didn't matter whether I was good or bad.
It's crazy. Kevin, man, I love talking to you. I could talk an hour about statins. Just real quick, I'll make it brief. I went down that path myself. In my 30s, they put me on statins. I was on them for like 10 years. Biggest regret of my life. Brain fog, memory issues, muscle aches, all these sort of side effects from it. And again, Providence, right? All of this, it's so interesting, some of the things you're saying, because just yesterday, I went to get my CAC scan, coronary artery calcium scan, and it cost me $50 out of pocket to get this scan. I don't have the results back, but I'm going to share them on my channel. But I have a feeling it's going to come back like this. But my point with this was, Kevin, I took those statins for almost 10 years.
Wow.
Brain fog. God knows the side effects because I was on so much other medication. Thousands and thousands of dollars in doctor's visits to take those statins. I recently learned from interviewing a heart surgeon. Do you know like what those statins even do? Most people don't even know. What it would do is prevent one person out of 100 from potentially having a heart attack. And you have to take them for 30 years straight. If you take the statins for 30 years straight, it will extend your life by 3 to 4 days.
Yeah.
Four days for 30 years and thousands of dollars and God knows what side effects. And my point is, why didn't I just get a CAC scan? I literally did the CAC scan yesterday. I've heard about these before. And in my brain, I'm always like, I probably got to go to the cardiologist and get a referral. It's probably going to be $10,000. It's like a big MRI machine. No insurance, no nothing. I called up a private place. They charged me $50. It took me 5 minutes to get this scan. I'm like, why the hell didn't they tell me to do that before they put me on 10 years of statins before that? It could have just been like, it's looking at the root cause. Okay, do I have any calcification, any issues in my arteries at all instead of this? Well, you might because of your cholesterol. And then, sorry, I'm ranting now, but your point on cholesterol too, because Kevin, people tell me this, Carrie, you would have healed. I'm off all my medication now. I'm down 100 pounds. I'm so much healthier. But people are like, you'd have done the same thing if you just got rid of junk food. And I'm like, no, a big part of it was getting that fatty meat back for me. When I did that, my cholesterol went up slightly. My testosterone has now doubled on carnivore. My sleep has improved and my depression went away. And all of those things are related to our hormones. And when you're starving your hormones of these natural things, like throughout mankind, since the start of mankind, we would have been eating fatty meat and our hormones would have been perfectly regulated. But now over the last couple of decades, I was told low fat salad dressing, little bit of protein, have some like low fat chicken breast, but don't have any fat or anything like that. I swear when I started getting that fat back, I could feel it in my body. My sleep improved. My depression went away. My testosterone doubled. And that's all in my medical records. And you look at like, sorry, one last thing. You look at like India, right? India is one of the, that's all they do is they eat vegetables over there and they, like no meat or anything. Their incidence of depression and fertility issues is through the roof. And that's all related to our hormones. It's like, it makes perfect sense.
Everything is related to our hormones. Everything under the sun, under the moon, it all affects, hormones affect everything. And everything affects hormones. So whether it's the sun shining or the moon, your circadian rhythm, right? Everything affects your hormones. Yeah. What you're eating, what you're not eating, what you're doing or not doing, sedentary lifestyle, everything affects, you know, how your day went, affects your hormones. So, you know, and to the point that you were talking about with lower cholesterol with statins, you're absolutely right. I mean, this long-term use of statins, it's suicide. I think that there's a direct correlation with dementia, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, direct correlation with that. However, much like what saved my life, there is a special place for the repurposed use of medicine. Right. And I'll give you an example of a statin. I deal a lot with hormonally driven disease, with cancer, hormonally influenced disease, estrogen receptor positive, things of that nature, where if they have more hormones, it could create a complexity with their disease. So many times you'll see well, a suggestion be made, take the statin for 6 weeks to reduce your cholesterol, which is a hormone. So there, to suppress cholesterol or to suppress hormones, sometimes a statin would be recommended. Also, conversely, my father is a recipient of a heart transplant. He's on statins. He's been on statins for years and years, which I don't agree with the longevity of it. However, for him, it's not cholesterol. It's an anti-rejection medicine for his heart transplant. So it's a multi-purpose use, I guess, if you apply it the right way. You know, a lot of this stuff is not whether or not medicine works. All of it works. You just have to apply it properly to the right ailment.
So, Kevin, stepping back, like, man, we got to do another video together because I could talk to you for a couple hours about some of this. But what happened with your cancer journey is incredible, by the way. Like, you talked about it kind of quickly, but I don't think a lot of people realize when we're talking about stage 4 cancer, how serious that is. And when you talked about the medication, I can't imagine what that was like for you when you're going through the cancer and you're on this medication. And it must in some ways be sort of like a ticking clock where, hey, I had another very close friend of mine that went through cancer and he had 3 types of medications that are like, this one's going to stop working. It's going to be ineffective after a while. And then you'll have this one and then you'll have this one, and then that's it. And I can't imagine what that sort of ticking like is going down. But the fact that you got through all of that medication and then you still found healing afterwards is remarkable. It's incredible. I know you've been telling your story some more, and I know there's other people out there getting their story out there about fenbendazole and repurposing these drugs. It's like, how do we get the word out? How do we get this message out to more people? I don't know. I have so many questions. I guess one, if I condense this down, if there's people watching this and they have a loved one diagnosed with cancer, they are, how do you even approach this conversation or start talking to them about what they could be doing?
Well, it doesn't have to be an either or thing. Now, make no mistake about it. Western medicine saved my life. I do not vilify Western medicine. My doctors were brilliant. They were absolutely brilliant. And they did. They saved my life. They didn't cure me of cancer, but they did. My surgeon absolutely saved my life. My radiation oncologist, absolutely a wizard. Medically, they didn't cure my cancer, but they kept me alive long enough for me to figure things out. And but having said that, how to get that message out is just continue the conversation. It's not an either or thing. You know, there's no conflict with this. These are all over-the-counter things that cover the same pathways that the chemicals cover. Now, here's the glitch. The chemicals, whether or not they're Western medicine or over-the-counter supplements or whatever, the chemicals are going to do what the science says they're going to do. The fenbendazole, the ivermectin. Listen, the reason why I can't vilify Western medicine is because Western medicine proved my point. Western medicine is the one who published all this information. They're the ones who did the clinical trials. They're the ones who published the peer-reviewed studies. They're the ones who did all this and documented it all as being successful specifically for certain diseases. So I can't vilify Western medicine. They're my evidence. If I threw stones at them, I'd be setting myself on fire, right? So I don't vilify Western medicine. And you don't have to choose one or the other. Right. I have a platform where tens of thousands of people do both, and some others choose one or the other. You know, just because you and I both take fenbendazole or ivermectin, you know, we go to Tractor Supply and we get some paste off the shelf or whatever. The Tractor Supply in Wisconsin and the Tractor Supply in Florida, same. The same fenbendazole is going to be on your shelf, it's on my shelf. Now, the difference is not the science. The science is the same. And it's not even our biology that's going to determine the efficacy as much as it is how you execute. And I'll give you an example, like fenbendazole. It's only got like an 8-hour half-life in your body. And if you look on the internet, anybody, you know, anybody who survived cancer has got a protocol out there. They all have podcasts. I got one. So, you know, but so everybody's got an opinion, right? And I see a lot of, I took Fenbendazole once a day, 3 days on, 4 days off. Put my left leg in, my right leg out. I did the hokey pokey and boom, I'm cured. Or no, it didn't work. Or whatever the results were. And I would argue, well, you did it once a day and the half-life's 8 hours in your body. And if you're only dosing once a day, then you're vulnerable for 16 hours a day. You should dose it three times a day for complete coverage. That's kind of like my logical thought on it. But how you execute will determine the efficacy and the impact that this medicine has. And it's no different than nutrition or how you execute a protocol. In fact, I suggest that it's not the medicine as much as it is the complete program that I have developed. And that is a three-tier program. And it's not a new invention. I shouldn't make it sound like that. It's a common sense declaration of sort. And that is the correct protocol applied and executed the proper way. That's going to cover 3/4 of your pathways for disease. However, it's not going to cover them all. Execution of a good nutritional lifestyle and some stimulation of lean skeletal muscle. It's going to release your myokine proteins, specifically your irisin, which is the number one contributing factor to your immune system, the number one combatant of disease in your body. So one is no more important than the other. I think it's a multidimensional way to stay healthy and to choose a healthier way of living, for sure.
Do you, you kind of touched on this already, but I've interviewed several individuals with cancer, and one frustration is it seems kind of unfortunate that in many cases you have to learn all of these things on your own. Like you don't go and get diagnosed with cancer and they start talking about metabolic therapy or nutrition or food. In fact, many of the people I've interviewed that have cancer, if they go in for treatments, they're feeding them Ensure and cookies and they're like, what the hell are we doing here kind of thing. Is that frustrating for you at all? Is that something you've thought about?
Absolutely. And you know what the thing is I go to the hospital now for checkups, and stuff. And when I go there, all of my doctors show up to that appointment. They all come and they, if not for anything else, just to say hi and to be social, I guess you could say, but really what they're doing is they're checking. They want to know, well, what am I doing different? And the only thing I could say is outside of the repurposed efforts that is actually in my chart now, they've documented that I'm doing those repurposed medicines. But the one common conversation that we have every single time is nutrition. And that is, I'm sitting in, just like you said, in the infusion room when everybody's getting their chemo. They're filling you with brownies and cookies and I mean, literally you're putting poison into you through your veins and poison into you through your mouth, So it's just, we're digging our grave with a spoon. I mean, you know what? It doesn't even matter how disciplined you are. Like you say that you've been doing this for years, and which is great, because I know that you're not in deprivation of carbohydrates. You're not in deprivation of glucose. Your body's releasing that stuff anyway. So, your glucose. And so you're getting everything that you need to get. You're doing everything that you need to do. But for me, with this addiction, it's a slippery slope. Like you said, you stray a second and then bam, you're off to the races, right? Like it's from one extreme to the next. So I have to rely on this intermittent fasting and just complete withdrawal, right, and omission of any temptation, So
I'm with you. You mentioned earlier, so I know you're not doing a carnivore diet, but is that something you've ever considered? And I'm not trying to sell you on it.
No. I wanted to talk about this. Oh my God, I've been rambling all this time. And really what I want, the whole reason why I wanted to do your podcast is so I could talk to you about the carnivore diet. Yeah, we should circle back. So I do now what I consider like a ketovore diet. So because of my situation, I love me, but I need the roughage to kind of push things through, you know? And so if I eat meat one day, because I intermittent fast, I'm only eating the one time, right? So if I eat meat one day, you guarantee I'm eating a salad the next day. You know, like there's, I don't take any medicine to control my bowel movements or anything like that. I was in an ileostomy bag for a while and they reversed all that. So now I completely am like, my plumbing is, I don't want to say the same as everybody else because I'm missing some parts, but it flows the same way. And so I have to control that with nutrition. Now that was a very fundamental thing to say, meat versus roughage, but it's a little more complicated than that, but I'm just saying.
Right.
So, but yeah, so it, for me, it's almost like a survival thing, you know? But if I stray just an inch, I go down this horrible path and there's consequence. You know, I'll be backed up for a few days, or I'll be buckled over in pain, whatever the consequences, there is a price for everything.
Right.
You know, and your discipline is admirable, you know, but I want to transition to meat and more meat.
Oh man. I'd love to, any way we can assist you or help you with that. We got a whole like group. You're welcome to just jump in for free if you want, where we're supporting people that are doing that, because it's a hard thing to do, especially, well, you have much different circumstances than most people with the surgeries and things like that you've had. But it's, you mentioned me doing this so strict is kind of admirable. It's actually really easy, which is so counterintuitive. It sounds crazy. It sounds so restrictive, but once you get into carnivore, there's a point where a switch goes off and it's like, I'm no longer eating food for entertainment. This is just energy. It's like fuel in my engine. And it's not an exaggeration. Like, I have no cravings for anything. It's the greatest thing in the world. The other thing I was going to say real quick too was, I've interviewed so many people, Kevin, including this guy. His name is Kent Carnivore, Lee Kopis. We flew out to the UK and filmed him. And he lost his colon. And he has an ileostomy bag also. And he's in our documentary we're doing. But his story was crazy to me because he's like, I believe, first of all, I would still have my colon if I was eating carnivore before this. There's actually a lot of damage you can get, as crazy as it sounds. Of course, fruits and vegetables are better than junk food, of course. But there's a lot of damage we have from those things. And the example that Lee gave that really opened a lot of people's eyes, and I think it will in our documentary, he could see what was going on because he could see his ileostomy bag. So Lee would, the doctors are like, you just, no meat. You got to have vegetables. You got to have salad. You got to have this. And he would eat a salad and the whole bag would fill up with gas and green sludge. And it's fermenting in his gut. And he would have IBS and he would have these painful stomach issues over and over again. And then he would eat meat. And he did it once where he ate meat and he looked in the bag, no gas in the bag, just this little tiny bit of liquid. And he's like, man, it's like, my body is pulling all of the fats and proteins and nutrients out of that meat. And there's like this much left when it's done. But I eat a salad and the whole bag's filled up.
That's absolutely correct. It happened to me. I never made the connection between the two, but you're 100%. It's a big deal too when you have the bag, because you're going to burp it all the time and stuff and it'll clear a room.
So now Lee has no colon, and this guy's been carnivore longer than me. I think he's on like 5 years. He's absolutely just thriving with no colon. All he does is beef, butter, bacon, eggs, meat. I'll send you his YouTube channel is Kent Carnivore. He's got some incredible videos. Please. But
I just bought a cow. I'm in. Like, I literally committed. I have this. So I built this big outdoor kitchen with several different types of grills. And then I just ordered a cow.
Nice.
Oh, dude, I'm in. Like, I am 100% committed.
The thing I would say, so you have interesting circumstances, so I don't want to speak, like, you may have to do things differently, but I don't know. Maybe you could do better on strict carnivore than you realize if you get into it. The problem with a lot of people is when they first start carnivore, there's a lot of changes to our gut bacteria, gut biome, even if you're doing keto going into it. And so there's this transition period that usually takes 2 or 3 weeks where your gut biome's changing. You're actually killing off a lot of the bad gut bacteria if you don't give it any starches or vegetables, plants, things like that. But a lot of people suffer through that and they're like, man, I just can't do carnivore. My stomach's not getting it. and they're just not getting over that little bit of a hump. You get over that hump and it is smooth sailing. Like I've talked to thousands of people at this point, and it's just like the healing really starts, and you're not those cravings that go away. That's been the biggest blessing. It seems so restricted, but it's the most liberating way of eating. I don't even think about eating anymore. I mean, I really appreciate a big ribeye, but it's not like that addiction anymore. Like you're jonesing for more of that kind of thing. So
I'm in.
Awesome. Kevin, I wish we had more time. I would love, you have an open invite, my friend. I'd love to do this again sometime. I do a lot of live streams too. I don't know if you ever want to do one of those, but where we can do this live and people can post questions, but I want to dig into more with you if we do another video, more of your journey and stuff. There's just so much. I just interviewed for the third time yesterday a gentleman, Anthony Haydick. He has stage 4 GIST cancer, and he did a little bit of chemo, and it was just killing him, and he's going the natural route now. But he's doing a lot of supplementation like you are, and now it's making me think. I'm not sure if he's doing fenbendazole or not. I think he might be. But I'm definitely going to send him this video and talk to him some more. He just went skydiving yesterday. He's like, he's living his life to the fullest. He's incredible.
Awesome. That is awesome.
Kevin, where can people find you? And if they want to learn more about the protocol that worked for you, where can they learn more?
Beating Cancer Today is a group page on Facebook. You could direct message me on Facebook if you want. I respond to just about everything. Sometimes it takes me a few minutes, but I'll get back to you. Beatingcancertoday.com is the website. And I, Fortified with Kevin Hennings is a podcast, and also Beating Cancer Today is also another podcast that I do both also. And, I do public speaking and I'm kind of all over the place schedule wise, but I am oddly always available.
I love it. I could tell you do the public speaking too, because you're a good storyteller. You had me on my edge of the seat there. I will have a link in the description below for everything Kevin just mentioned. And Kevin, I'll shoot you an email afterwards too, because there's quite a few people I've been talking to that might be good interviews on your podcast as well. So I'll send some of those folks your way also.
That'd be great, man. Thank you,
Kevin. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
All right, brother. Thank you.